Welcome to the Zweigletter Podcast, putting architectural, engineering, planning, and environmental consulting advice and guidance in your ear. Zweig Group's team of experts have spent more than three decades elevating the industry by helping AEP and environmental consulting firms thrive. And these podcasts deliver invaluable management, industry, client, marketing, and HR advice directly to you, free of charge. The Zweigletter Podcasts, elevating the design industry one episode at a time.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of the Zweigletter Podcast. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn. I'm excited to be with you as always. We have a great episode on tap for you today. This individual, my next guest, is somebody that I won't say I hounded him for a while to come on the podcast, but I will say that this episode has been a long time coming, and he's somebody that I've had interactions with and quite familiar with his work in our industry and our space. And so excited to have Christopher Parsons on. He is the founder and CEO of Knowledge Architecture, based out of San Francisco, a city that is near and dear to my heart. Those of you that know, I used to live in the Bay Area. So any chance I get to talk with somebody from the Bay is always a fun conversation. So without further ado, I want to welcome Christopher Parsons to the Zweigletter Podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great. Good to see you.
Absolutely. Listen, Chris, why don't you just give our audience kind of a background of who Christopher Parsons is, your superhero origin story as it relates to Knowledge Architecture. And I want to frame it by letting folks know that one of the common refrains, if anybody has heard me speak at a Zweig Group event, whether it's the TPA or any other program or at Hot Firm or Elevate, I've always talked about the importance of the transfer of knowledge and the transfer of information from one generation to next when it comes to design professionals. I have been privileged to be a part of this industry since the 90s, and the information that I have learned about this industry is remarkable. The stories that have been told to me, all of the amazing things that design professionals, both engineers and architects, are able to do is simply nothing short of amazing as far as I'm concerned. And I think a lot of times my contention has always been, if we don't memorialize this information, if we don't catalog it and keep track of the great things that have been done in this space outside of what we physically see with our eyes, then I think that we could lose some of the amazing knowledge and information that has transferred over the decades, at least in the last century plus of time that I could specifically speak of, and how much change has come about in the design industry space. And so I thought it would be great to have Christopher Parsons on because he eats, sleeps, and drinks this. His whole concept of understanding the transfer of knowledge is essentially why he gets up every day to do what he does. And one of the reasons that originally delayed us coming together was simply that he was working on something new, which is a program that we will tease a little later on, Synthesis 6, which I think fully comes out in June of 2024. But the bottom line is that he has had his finger on the pulse of the transfer of knowledge in the design industry space. You've heard me talk about it on this podcast. This is an episode that you're going to want to listen to several times. You're going to want to really take to heart what Christopher has to share. And I hope I didn't hype you up that too much, Chris, but I would love for you on the heels of that preamble, if you will, I'd love for you just to kind of tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's a great segue because I also just love this industry and love the knowledge management space. And so the way I got here, I'll give you the short version. I graduated in 1999 with a history degree and a political science major from Wake Forest. My first job was in LA. I was in a technology company and we did technology consulting for companies of all types. Got on a project in San Francisco, fell in love with the city the first time I kind of came up the BART and into Montgomery Street. And I'm like, this is my place. So I got to find a way to get here. So I got transferred to the San Francisco office, was more working with dot-coms because time frame wise, now we're in 2000. This is dot-com boom, peak dot-com boom. I know there can be some people listening who don't maybe know about the dot-com boom, but it was a tech hype cycle unlike any other. That boom eventually crashed. So the tech industry was kind of decimated here in the city, and 9/11 all happened within the same year. basically. And so what that meant was somebody with 2 years of work experience, I was out of work and there was no tech really hiring. I wanted to stay in the city of San Francisco. I moved there partly so I could walk to work, you know, and so I put a constraint around quality of life. And who was hiring were like architecture firms, law firms, insurance, like whoever's here in San Francisco. So I got this job in this architecture firm to ride out that recession, thinking I would go right back into tech, you know, on the other end. But what ended up happening was I fell in love with the practice of architecture. And instead of being there for 1 year, I stayed for five. And I was drawn to, you know, the art and the science of architecture and design. I was drawn to the political aspects of it. The technology was rapidly changing. And there were just all these angles that made it a really interesting, cool place to work. So I decided to stay in architecture, went to a larger firm, became the CIO. I was IT director at the first firm, CIO at the second, chief information officer. And what I kind of sussed out in those two companies was, you know, IT and AEC, I would break into kind of three broad buckets. The first bucket is infrastructure. So these are servers, email, security. It would be the same in a law firm or an accounting firm, you know, or an advertising firm. Like that's kind of like just core IT. There's design technology, you know, Revit, BIM, CAD, all that stuff. And then there was a third bucket, which I would call knowledge management. So these are anywhere from, you know, CRM systems to intranets to digital asset management systems. Like there's all this technology and these all these practices around capturing and managing and sharing knowledge more effectively. And that was what I was drawn to. And so after I had kind of worked at 8 years in those two firms, I kind of hit a fork in my career. And the kind of choice was, do I go to a large architecture firm and become the chief knowledge officer or director of knowledge management or something like that and just do KM all day long? Or do I start a business that does knowledge management? And what I thought we would do, I chose the latter path, obviously called it knowledge architecture. What I thought I would be doing is being like a virtual chief knowledge officer to like four or five firms. And, you know, maybe I work with one each day and then on Fridays I, you know, send invoices and then, you know, go off early and go on a run or something. What I found very quickly within the first year is that this was meant to be a software company and we were meant to work with a lot of firms. So we now work with, by the end of this year, probably close to 150 AEC firms. We work 100% with AEC firms running our Synthesis intranet platform. And that's kind of like a very compressed, like how I got into KA. I'll add one more piece to that that I think is important is while we are a software company, success in knowledge management is about technology, but it's also about people and process. And so a big part of our success and our journey has been to discover best practices around how to set up a knowledge management team. What are the different elements of knowledge management? Anywhere from sharing lessons learned to company universities to, yes, you know, intranets, internal communications. I could go on. Like there's a lot to it. And then how do you structure teams around that? So we've built a set of best practices. We've built an online community. We have conferences and events to share knowledge about how to share knowledge. And so we've just been blessed to work with such sharing, generous, smart clients, you know, for this 15-year journey we've been on.
I mean, it's exciting. I remember when I first discovered you guys and I was like, oh my gosh, these guys do what I've been talking about for the longest time. And it's so refreshing to see somebody that A, comes from the industry and has an understanding of it, right? It's not like you were just an individual with a technology background. While that is partly the case, you also understand this industry because you came from this industry. So you have the kind of the best of both worlds when it comes to building something that people could appreciate in the design industry space because it was built and it was created by individuals, not just yourself, but I'm sure others on your team that have some background and has some skin in the game when it comes to the design environment and what that's like on a regular basis. Is that a fair assessment?
For sure. I mean, so I had gotten lucky. In my first architecture firm, I fell into this group called AEC IT Leaders and, you know, would get together twice a year in person. There were probably, at the time I was in it, there were probably 50 companies. So, you know, you get 35 folks at one of these roundtables. And then we had an email group too. And, you know, I started tinkering like in the kind of early 2000s, building intranets was really hard. You know, there weren't good platforms around. A lot of people spent a lot of money with consultants doing it. So I had built some stuff internally and showed that group like, hey, this is what I'm working on. And they're like, whoa, that's pretty cool stuff. And then the same thing happened after the second company. I did also built an intranet there and showed people and like, wow, this is pretty cool. And the reason it was cool, I think, is like, for example, I sat between the principals and the marketing department and I watched physically them go back and forth and ask questions all day long, like, how many higher ed projects have we built in California over 50,000 square feet, blah, 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 blah. And like different answers would, like there's one right answer to that question, you know, but like, because, you know, there were opportunities to improve knowledge management, I'm like, we could do better, you know, or I'd see that we're making up different processes on ways to do certain projects, or we haven't really memorialized what we've known. So like my problem was their problem. Like those were my clients. And so I just had direct insight into where firms were struggling. And it turned out, as I shared this with other people, those were universal challenges around good information management, good knowledge sharing. And so that kind of gave me an unfair advantage in some ways in starting the company, and also cared deeply.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's kind of half the battle, right? I mean, is that when you see a need and you're able to fulfill that need or fill it, that's huge. And I think it would be helpful, and we talked about this on an earlier call that we had before this podcast, is to kind of talk about the evolution of knowledge management. We kind of talked about like a 1.0, 2.0, 3.0 example. And I think that would be helpful for people to have an understanding, because I know people now think, oh, well, you know, yeah, I know about intranets and, oh, well, we have Slack now, so I think we're all set. So it's a lot more to it than just that. And I would love for you just to kind of quickly walk our audience through this understanding of how knowledge management has evolved, and you have evolved with it. And now this iteration of what you have created is taking into consideration all of the different changes that we are seeing in technology, namely those two letters that everybody spouts off at the end of every sentence, AI. And so I think it's important for us to kind of understand where we were and where we are today. And I'd love for you just to kind of talk about that from a knowledge management perspective.
Yeah. So let's go back. My first architecture firm, 2002, that squarely in KM 1.0. And I think to overly simplify this kind of my thinking on this, I'm thinking about it both in terms of culture and in terms of technology. So I think it's fair to say broadly that knowledge management in 1.0 was a little more top-down, meaning the folks with the most experience, the most tenure within the company, decided what the way our firm does this is, or, you know, kind of memorialized standards and best practices and manuals and guides within the company. So that was kind of like a top-down in that way, but also the technology was very hard to use and was very static. And so what you typically find at a company is you'd have one or two people who would, they would take the blessed knowledge from the most senior people, and they would put it in the system and make it available to everybody. And they were either the only people that knew how to use the system because it was difficult. Maybe they needed to know some HTML or some programming. And it was just super convoluted. So you ended up with a very static system that was very reliant on senior people. Search was terrible. You know, it was a lot of pages of documents, like was a lot of what we saw at KM 1.0. If we flash forward a little bit to kind of 2008-ish, the rise of Web 2.0 and social and wikis and blogs and Facebook and Twitter, you know, kind of hitting the scene. What I saw, I was still in an AE and an architecture firm at that time, is that social media stuff outside is going to come inside the company. It's going to help us do knowledge sharing. It's going to help us talk about what's going on. It's going to unlock a culture change where instead of being kind of top-down knowledge management, it's more of a network or a community. And people can ask questions and they can get answers from across the whole company. And it recognizes that a job captain may actually know the most about a particular topic, whether it's a technology or not, in the company, and they should be able to upload their knowledge or share with a company. And we should break out of this kind of top-down KM and make it much more of a network and much more social. And so that was like, I started incorporating some of that technology into versions of what later became Synthesis. And it seemed like it struck a nerve. And so when we launched in 2009, it was squarely right at the beginning of KM 2.0. Like that was the wave we rode into the industry. And I think in some ways helped usher into the industry, right? And so we started talking about at conferences, both ours and others, like, what does it mean to have this democratic knowledge management? What does it mean to have anybody be able to post or comment? And this all seems kind of quaint in 2024. But in 2009, 2010, 2011, there was a lot of fear inside companies. What do you mean you were going to let anybody in the company share or ask a question or comment? Like people were very afraid the wrong information would get shared or the firm would get criticized or all these kind of different scenarios, most of which never ever came to pass. And so now in 2024, I think we're very much at the end of this KM 2.0 wave, right? Where that is now normal. Like for most companies in AEC, they operate more like a network, more like a community. Anybody in the company is allowed to share, especially when Teams came in during the pandemic or Slack, depending on what the technology of the company is. It's just like, you're not going to put this genie back in the bottle. So we have become a much more democratic company. So like we're kind of at the end of KM 2.0 and the beginning of 3.0. And you're right, AI is the thing. So I believe that the next big wave has started. KM 3.0 is going to be about that network and that community of individuals plus AI and what it can unlock for you, how it can help you share knowledge more effectively, create knowledge, manage knowledge, search and find knowledge. That's where I think this thing is going. We're building a lot of tech believing that's true. And I think what's going to be very interesting is, you know, I think those layers stack on top of each other. So KM 1.0 is still alive. It's been, you know, we built KM 2.0 on top of that. And so the firms that had been very intentional about capturing their knowledge, especially high quality, accurate knowledge, making sure that it's up to date, they're going to very much benefit from this new AI wave, because your response in AI is only as good as the underlying data and knowledge that you have. And so the better knowledge you have, the better results you're going to get with AI. And I think we're going to see that over the next few years for sure.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, and I know, I mean, people are listening to this. They're like, oh my gosh, my head is spinning right now because Christopher has just laid this whole thing down. But, you know, not that it needs to be simplified, but you and I kind of spoke about the graying of this industry and that people are retiring and there is a lot of knowledge that's going out the door every day, not necessarily through forced retirement, but through people just saying, hey, I've put my 35 years in, I'm leaving. And there's so much valuable information and experiential knowledge that goes out the door. And I kind of feel like what you guys are doing is partly being able to get a handle on that on a firm by firm basis, to be able to make sure that all of that amazing information and knowledge that some of those senior leaders have doesn't get lost. And that the next generation, which has always been my contention, is that are we transferring that knowledge from one generation to the next in the design industry space? Because it's incumbent upon us to do that in order to ensure that this industry continues to grow, which I believe it will, but we have to have a method and a way to transfer this knowledge and information.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot I'd love to say about that. I'll start with maybe the way I define knowledge management, which is enabling companies to make the best use of their knowledge. And so I think you can think about it the way that you presented it as a, you know, we have people retiring that have critical knowledge within the company. How do we make sure that that stays within the organization to the extent that it can? You'll never get perfect at it. I think there's another way of looking at it, which is what's the opportunity? So how can we further leverage both the people, but then also what they know to, you know, grow our company faster or to do higher quality work or better design or engage our employees better? And I think, you know, this is partly technology and it's partly not. You know, this is, you know, if you take learning and development, for example, some of that is just mentorship that's one-on-one, whether it's on a Zoom call or sitting by somebody. Like that old approach in quotes is still a great approach. Like there's nothing that replaces a mentor who cares about you, who personalizes their advice to you, who looks out for you, who helps you see, you know, kind of what can be possible for you and then helps you navigate obstacles. On the other hand, on the technology side, you know, we see a lot of companies, I'll keep narrowing it to get something very practical. Video is a huge technology for us. And I think whether it's recording, you know, senior people talking about the beginning of the company, whether it's people doing like how we navigated difficult design problems, whether it's talking about, you know, through a learning management program, you know, our approach to doing certain projects or our brand, capturing all that on video that's now searchable because of some of these new technologies is going to allow people in the moment, but then down the road to interact and ask questions, you know, of synthesis. And it's going to be able to pull stuff out of those videos or out of the documents or posts or wikis on our site. So the more that you can capture, and again, I'm emphasizing kind of high quality knowledge, especially this critical knowledge like you were talking about, that is going to become an asset and a resource for years to come that companies can tap into. But it should be paired with mentorship and relationships. Like I'm not saying technology can supplant that because it can't, but those two things together.
Yeah. And I, you know, as you shared that with me when we last spoke and I thought about that, it's an and, right? It's not an or. It's like we have to do this and we have to do that. So the mentorship and the mentoring is never going to go away. I think actually a lot of companies could really double down on the whole concept of mentoring, what it means to be a mentor, what it means to be a mentee, right? So that you can manage expectations across the board, because there's so much that you can unpack around that. I think that you're absolutely right. I think the storytelling piece of it is huge. And I've had some experiences with several firms that I've gone in and kind of memorialized some of their story via podcasting, because that's what I do. And I've had some tremendous aha moments by the participants about how valuable that information is, and how, you know, that's just one of several ways of getting that knowledge transferred from one generation or one group of individuals within a company to another. And I think that, you know, between that, the oral tradition, the technology tradition, and then how that all gets married with AI, I mean, it's got to be, you know, it's almost like you got to be able to peer around the corner for what's coming up next and how that will allow you to leverage the information even better than we can today in 2024 as we're recording this.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's, you know, I put together this thing multiple years ago. It's called a periodic table of knowledge management elements. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. And it really, I think it was a useful tool because it helped people understand the breadth of how much knowledge there is to manage in an AEC firm and the different practices that are used to try and accomplish it. What I generally found is that people got excited when they first saw it, and their second emotion was getting a little bit overwhelmed and depressed because it looked hard. And the thing I always say about that is, like, it's a shopping list, not a to-do list. And you really need to understand the strategy of the company and figure out how knowledge can support that. Because the thing to know about knowledge managers is you can't capture it all. Like, the industry is changing too fast. There's too many materials. There's too many new technologies. There's too much to capture it all. And so it's really kind of understanding, is the biggest challenge in my company quality? Or is it growth? Or is it expanding the next generation of designers? Like, whatever the thing is you're trying to do, you can use knowledge management to help support that. And then you can kind of put those programs behind it. It's harder when you kind of say, like, yeah, we should be doing more internal comms, and we should start communities of practice, and we should do a company university, and we should also do mentoring, and we should also do this intranet thing. And we should, you know, it's like, you can just get lost and wrapped around an axle way too easily. And so really kind of starting from first principles of, like, what do we need to do to move the business forward this year and next year and the year after that? And how can knowledge management and that technology come back behind it and support it? That is what makes really great firms stand out. And I think being intentional about it, I think every firm is doing knowledge management, whether they call it that or not. Like, you don't get to go from generation one of the firm to the next generation without transferring some knowledge, or the firm would have closed, right? You don't go from 30 people to 80 people without transferring some knowledge. There's no way that's possible, but you can do it much more intentionally and effectively. And that's the kind of work that our team has been working on for the last 15 years with our clients.
And just to unpack it for the audience here, let's talk a little bit about what you've actually come up with. I would call it your baby, but I know it's more than that. So, but let's talk a little bit about synthesis, and specifically Synthesis 6. And what is it? How can people kind of get their arms around this and what you have created? Because you're serving clients, primarily your sweet spot are mid-size AEC firms between 50 and 1,000 employees, right? And that's right. A majority of our audience. We do have some people that are part of much larger organizations, which this would apply to them as well, but that's your sweet spot. But I would love for you just to kind of talk about and walk us through a little bit of what Synthesis 6 is and maybe what it isn't, right? Because I know a lot of times, and I know I'm guilty of this, I always think of a software product or even a software as a service product as kind of like a, well, this is going to cure everything that ails me. And that certainly couldn't be further from the truth. So I would love for you maybe just to unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah, I'll start by saying Synthesis 6 is available now. I think what's coming in June is our new video AI feature, which we can touch on later if you want. From first principles, an intranet is what we define as a website inside your firm. It's an internal website. And it helps people get information they need to do their job. So there's kind of like three broad buckets on what we call kind of like essential content. So that is the firm's policies, procedures, benefits, you know, the different manuals, the standards, all that kind of stuff you need from HR to project management to IT and beyond, like just the stuff you need to run your firm. It also, in Synthesis, we have employee directories and profiles and project directories and profiles. So who works here? Who knows what software? Who speaks what languages? How do I find a person within the company that can help me with whatever it is I'm working on? And the same on the project side. So just like, what are all the projects we've done in each market sector? What was the square footage? Who worked on what? Who was the project manager? Where was it located? Like, we just try and make that information available to the whole company. And we partly do that through integrations with systems like Deltek and Uninet and Nuforma and OpenAsset and kind of systems you typically find in the industry. So like step one, we have kind of like, we call it the internet maturity model. Like that's level one for us, is that kind of essential content where people can get that information. Level two for us is the internal comms level. So I know what's happening at the firm as an employee. I know what's going on with principals. They're sharing vision, mission, and strategy. We're hearing about what's going on in different practice areas, you know, on different project updates, people getting licensed or new people joining the firm. It's that internal comms piece. And the third piece in our, the level three, is about learning and development, right? I'm part of a learning organization. So I understand what learning opportunities are available to me. I get answers to my questions. Lessons learned are shared, and I can learn from other projects so I don't have to make the same mistake on my project. So those kind of three things together broadly are what we're trying to solve for, you know, kind of getting the content you need to do your job, comms, and learning and development. And then we wrap technology around that, you know, so that our technology does all three of those things in one package. And it's got those integrations that I mentioned. It's pure cloud at this point. It's been designed to be, this is an important thing. When we switch from Synthesis 5 to Synthesis 6, I won't get all into the details, but I think the hero statement for us was, we want it to be so that an HR manager or a project engineer or a project manager or a job captain who's responsible for a certain piece of knowledge within the company can update their knowledge and edit it without any training, you know, and these are periodic users, right? So maybe I've got something to add today, but I don't need to add something for another 2 months. They can just come in, add their knowledge, and go back to work. And so we wanted to make it super powerful and simple for anybody to use. And I think we've achieved that well. That's the feedback we've gotten from our clients in the year and a half it's been out in the wild.
Okay. I mean, geez, that's a lot. And what is, so then AI comes along, and I'm sure by the time you created what you had created, I mean, we all, well, I won't say we all knew that, right? Because I keep talking to people nowadays, and I'm like, I was remarking with my wife how much different our life is in the last year and a half since AI has really taken hold, and how we do things a lot differently now than we did even just 18 months ago. With the knowledge that you knew technology was coming along, I mean, did you see the impact that AI would have on the work that you're doing pretty quickly? Or was it something that was an evolutionary process that you are still uncovering things that you can, that allow you to do what you're doing even better?
I think it's definitely the latter. Columbia University in New York has a information and knowledge strategy master's degree program. And we were involved with that for many years. It's kind of like adjunct faculty. And we sponsored a capstone project with some graduate students to look into AI and synthesis in 2015. And at the end of that capstone project, we and the students concluded it's too early. Like the technology is not ready. It's too hard to use. We're going to sink a lot of money into this without a lot of return. So we put it on the shelf. And, you know, we were finishing up the transition to Synthesis 6 around, you know, we kind of wrapped into public beta in 2022. And then we went into general availability last year. And that's right when ChatGPT exploded and some of the generative AI stuff. And even so, like ChatGPT was exploding, but I'm like, I think a lot of companies were trying to rush to get an AI feature out to say we're doing something with AI. But we, that's never been our approach. It's been to really find something meaningful that will have long-term value. And so we, the timing was perfect. We had finished Synthesis 6, and I started a listening tour with 45 of our clients to basically say, look, we finished this Synthesis 6. We had not committed to any new features beyond it coming out because we wanted to go out to our community and find out what was the most important opportunity. And we heard two things. We heard learning management, like people wanted us to do something around learning and development. So we're building an LMS into Synthesis, and AI. And people didn't really know what we were going to do with AI. They just wanted us to do something with it. And the more we started kind of probing, and we had a couple clients who started helping us piece together the vision, we ended up figuring out that the most useful thing we could do in AI were two things. One was search. And so whether it has a search form factor or a chat form factor, basically it was like, I want to be able to have conversations with my intranet and ask it questions. You know, like, what's the best way to do this flashing on this project? Or who's the person I should go to for this? And get back answers, but answers sourced from the company's knowledge, not from the general internet like ChatGPT. So that was one big opportunity that came up, and that's what we're building now. We're also building video captioning. And at first blush, it might sound like, well, that's kind of quaint. Like auto video captioning's been around for a while. Why is that an important thing for KA to invest in? Two things. One, auto video captioning has gotten much better because it's using AI to help really do better transcriptions. But we had an opportunity to create an AEC-specific transcription model that's going to get all that technical terminology, all the acronyms, all that domain-specific knowledge correct And why do we care if we have really accurate captions? Well, one, accessibility, and that's a big initiative for us. But two, back to that AI search. So if we can reliably search video, which is a huge part of our content inside the product, we're going to make that chat experience or that search experience much, much richer. And so we wanted to unlock that high quality source of content. So those two things together, the video captioning and the search, we think are going to be pretty magical as they come together. So what's happening in June is the AI video is coming out. And then by the end of the year, we're doing AI search.
Well, I mean, I certainly concur with you. I mean, we see it in just everyday life, right? I mean, I was telling somebody the other day that even Apple Podcasts, they are now providing transcripts or captions for all podcasts now. And the reason why they're doing that is to make all podcasts searchable. And that's really the power of it. So that if I'm, you know, and then if you translate that to what you're doing in this space, if I want to go back and find out something that somebody said, a senior leader in an organization, and I have this information, you know, internally, I have access to it, I can find that, you know, and, or somebody can say, hey, your mentor can say to you, hey, go back to when I had this talk where I talked about X, Y, and Z. That first half of that talk will be really helpful for you based on what you're currently working on right now. And I mean, you'll just be able to leverage that data and information, something that would have, it would have been not necessarily finding a needle in the haystack just a couple of years ago, but it would have just been, the barrier to entry would have been much higher than it is today to capture and find that information.
Yeah, I would actually agree with the needle in a haystack. I think it's very, very, we use keyword search today, and we have optimized that pretty far. But what you end up with keyword search is a bunch of links and documents, right? It doesn't help you get answers. And so with the video piece, you'll be able to, like, so one workflow is what you said, the mentor knows this is a good video to watch and says you should watch it. Another workflow is I'm struggling with a problem. I ask Synthesis a question and it pulls it out of minute 37 in that video, gives me that text, gives me the answer, but then it links and cites back to that video and can take me right to that section of that video. So making those videos not only searchable in like a keyword sense, but like I can go extract content out of it to help me solve my problem or make progress. That's the big unlock that we're pursuing. And I think it's going to be huge.
I mean, I do too. And essentially what you, it sounds like what you're going to be able to do with Synthesis is allow each and every one of your firms and or clients to that you work with to be able to create their own large language learning models that they then have access to, right? Because I mean, if you think about all the data and information that we're accessing through like ChatGPT, it's a language learning model where you can access the information that that artificial intelligence has processed and that you're going to be able to, on a much smaller scale within an organization, process that same type of information, but for that organization. And then those individuals will be able to have better access and control of that information for a multitude of purposes.
Yeah, I think that's broadly right. I think we're using a bunch of, it's large language models are part of it. There are some other pieces we're using to make all that orchestration come together. But I think generally that's right. We're trying to create an experience where clients can interact with their own content, their own knowledge base. And what I think is going to be very interesting, Randy, is I expect that the experience that folks are going to have when they first use it is going to be pretty good. Meaning it's only going to answer using your content. So the answers will only be as good as the content you've put in the system, which I think is going to drive people to codifying and uploading and adding more information into the system, more of their high quality firm-wide knowledge so that they can get better answers out. Like it becomes this, I imagine it is like a center of gravity that's going to like pull good knowledge and information from across the company into the platform so that you can get these better answers. So I think it's going to be great for knowledge management in general. I think it's going to give people that big push to want to like get stuff together and also to edit out old or redundant or inaccurate information so that we're not giving people the wrong answers when they ask questions. So I think on both fronts, good new knowledge and kind of taking out and archiving old or outdated knowledge, it's going to be a big catalyst.
Yeah, it is. And to piggyback on that is one of the things that was highlighted from our last conversation was just this whole idea or concept. And I think I want anyone listening to this to understand it, that firms that have better systems for knowledge capture and sharing will be in a stronger position to leverage all of the new AI capabilities that we're discussing now and are around that proverbial corner that I keep mentioning. compared to those firms that are just getting started in the process? Or maybe you're a little technophobic and you're like, I just don't want to embrace that. It's just too much. And what would your response be to that firm leader?
I mean, I agree with the premise, I guess probably because I said it, that the firms that have already got a head start have a head start. I think that's true. I don't think it means it's too late for folks that want to, you know, kind of catch up, or they've been doing other things, whatever it is. I think this is going to be a golden era for knowledge management. I think it's really going to start fulfilling the promise. Like, knowledge management probably goes back to, you know, all the way back to like writing, you know, and Hammurabi or whatever. But like, I mean, from the modern era, probably like the mid 90s is when that term started getting used and people started writing the foundational texts that made this a field. And I feel like this elusive promise of KM has been just out of reach for a while. And I think this is the era where we actually realize it. And so I think, you know, there are firms that, and maybe they have really good knowledge, but it's totally scattered across their organization. So it's an opportunity for them to put it all in one place. Or they've just been so busy growing and being entrepreneurial and that they just haven't slowed down to write things down. And I think they'll see that, like, they hit growing. This is what always happens, Randy. Like, we've seen it most of the time when we get hired, it's because a firm has hit some kind of growth plateau, right? They've gone from 50 people to 100 people. And now there are another layer of associate principals. There's all these directors that didn't used to be there. And they are still operating like a 50 person, but they have 100 people. And they've got multiple offices and they're still operating like a single office firm. Or they've gone from like 100 people, but they're all healthcare, to like now we've added four different market sectors. So when that kind of change happens within the business and the kind of the knowledge management practices and the systems haven't caught up, that's a great time for KA to come in, or for knowledge management in general. It doesn't have to be KA. Because there's an opportunity, you'll feel that growing pain and you'll realize, like, I can't keep operating the way I was. I can't keep being the bottleneck. Like, if I'm a senior quality person or a senior project manager, I can't have to schedule a meeting or have someone come to my desk every time we need to teach them how to do something. Like, I need to invest in systems, you know, and processes, and make it so I can scale myself and leverage myself and the company can grow.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I think that I appreciate the way that you kind of simplified it for those listening. And just to unpack that even further, might you, and I know I'm putting you on the spot now, so if you're not able to, it's fine, but would you be able to share with our audience maybe an example of a short story of what you're doing now with knowledge architecture, and specifically through synthesis, is becoming a game changer for a lot of firms that are employing the program that you guys have put together?
Yeah, I mean, I will start with, so there are like some different archetypes of those stories, you know, depending on what's important to the company. I think that enabling smart growth is definitely a key reason, a way we help. We've got company, like, we very much help around mergers and acquisitions. So we're seeing a lot. I think what I have seen in the data, this is 2023 was the high watermark for M&A in our industry. And every projection says 2024 will be the same. And so we've got a company, Page, who is going to speak at K-Connect, our annual conference, talking about their integration with EYP and how being able to share knowledge across all the different, not only offices, but they have a lot of remote workers as well, help them kind of get on the same page culturally, help them take advantage of, you know, whenever you acquire a firm, hopefully the idea is 1 + 1 = 3, right? So we may not have this specific kind of project expertise or technical expertise, so we want to use your people on our projects, but vice versa, right? And we, by collaborating, we become a much bigger thing. So I think having a platform like Synthesis in the middle of a merger, like in advance of a merger, helps people get onboarded quickly, gets plugged into the culture quickly. They start seeing that what the principals are sharing and the designers are sharing and all the folks are sharing, and they get a sense of the culture and what's important and what we're winning and the different programs the company runs. So, you know, whether it's growth organically, whether it's growth through M&A, like, we exist as a company to help our firms, our clients, evolve and grow more effectively and more joyfully, right? That's what we really, like, when I really get up in the morning, like, that's what I'm thinking about, is how can we help clients make the best use of their knowledge so they can grow and evolve better? You know, whatever better means to them. Maybe finance, it may mean engagement.
I love that. So. I love that. And I'm sure as you guys continue to champion this effort, there'll be more stories to come of what companies are actually able to do as they implement this. As we wind up, I would love it if you kind of share with us, and we talked about this in our previous call, that there is a, you guys have this essential content checklist, which is a resource that actually any of our listeners could access for free that's offered through by Knowledge Architecture. And tell us a little bit about how this could help them, especially if they're dipping their toes in the water when it comes to knowledge management and what that entails.
Yeah. And so we released the first version of this, I think in 2016, I want to say 16, 17. And the insight was like, by that time we'd worked with probably about 80 companies and, you know, we go through onboarding, we figure out what's all of your more important knowledge. How do we structure that on your intranet? How do we break it down into different levels? And AEC firms are all different from each other, but they're also a lot of shared, you know, things. So they're all going to have HR content. They're all going to have project management and practice-ish kind of content. They're all going to have marketing, business development type content. And so what we really wanted to do was streamline that process of, you know, what is the most important content to make available to our employees in year one? Because intranets are evolving, growing things. So it's like, what can we do in year one that's going to move the needle for your company? And then what's a kind of a plan for a roadmap for year two, year three? What kind of content are we going to add and kind of build out over time? And so that checklist was built to help our clients be more effective during onboarding, turned out to be really useful to help them think and roadmap, you know, out multiple years. But another application of it has been for firms who don't end up hiring KA, it becomes useful. It helps them think about organizing whatever their intranet platform is, or it helps firms who are thinking about working with us a year from now and want to kind of like do something to get ready to be able to come and work with us. So it's just organized by function. It's kind of like very much vetted by our research. We have a companion piece now, which is an information architecture playbook, which helps you think about like visually, how do you kind of like structure and represent that with an intranet to make things easy to find. So we're always looking for opportunities to leverage the fact that we work 100% in AEC and create, I mean, it's knowledge management, right? What we're doing here. It's like, how do we create assets and make the best use of our knowledge to help our clients move faster and move better? So that's what those are. We've got more things like that, but those are two of the.
Yeah, well, we'll make sure that we include that in a link to the show notes. Those links will be on the show notes so they can take advantage of those checklists and gain some additional insight and information into how you guys are working. And certainly, if anybody that's listening to this is like, man, I need to have spoken to Christopher last week, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I should say there are people that are all levels of journey. Like we have met people who are like, we're a really good organization. We just need better technology. Like culturally, we do knowledge sharing well. We're a fine oil machine. We just need a better tool. To people like, I know we could be better. I know we're not quite there culturally. Like we meet people where they are and we help them get better. Right. And so I don't think people should feel intimidated by the things that we're, because we're talking at a pretty high level, but I think some of it's just like, I just need to make some of the basic information about our company available to people in one spot because information's scattered. So it can start as simple as that. And then we can get deeper into the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. Through our website, you can reach us at info@knowledge-architecture.com. That's the best way to reach out. One of our sales team is also from our client success team, meaning they do the implementations. They work with clients every day. So in some ways, like an AEC firm where you have seller doers, we're the same way. So somebody that you would talk to from our team is deeply ingrained in AEC and deeply ingrained in our product. And we see ourselves as a partner, not a vendor, you know, and so have very low pressure, collaborative conversations about like, can we help you or not? And I think that's a good way to get started.
I love that. Well, that's actually how Zwei Group operates as well. I mean, the whole idea is that they're always looking to saddle up to someone as a partner and not a vendor, right? Because one is more transactional, the other is more relational. And you guys have certainly figured out how to do that at a high level. So I really want to congratulate all the hard work that you've put into this industry and making a difference for us, especially as it pertains to the transfer of knowledge and knowledge management and what that means. So honestly, we're going to continue to root for your success and all that you're doing. And I do appreciate you, you know, on the eve of releasing this latest iteration of the software, that you would take time to sit down with us and kind of walk our listeners through just the whole concept of knowledge management and what it means, some of which I'm sure a lot of listeners have somewhat of a grasp on, but hopefully they'll all be able to say after listening to this episode that, yeah, Chris really highlighted and illumined some things that I was thinking about, but I couldn't give words to, but he gave me the language to understand that. And so, Christopher, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Zweig Letter podcast. We really, really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I think maybe I'll leave you with one thing. We started a conference in 2010 called K-Connect to focus on AEC knowledge management. We ran it for 11 years. Pandemic came, paused it. Finishing off Synthesis 6 came, didn't bring it back. We're bringing it back this year in August for the first time ever, for the first time in 5 years. So that's in Sundance, Utah. Ooh. It's going to be beautiful. It's registration's open now. Even if you can't attend in person, we have recorded every single talk from all K-Connect conferences. They're available on our website for free in the K-Connect Talk Archive. Maybe we can link to that in the show notes. And it covers everything from learning and development to internal communications to knowledge management 101. So if somebody's really wanting to like bring this inside their organization, industry folks have been incredibly generous with their time and energy sharing their case studies and how they work. And that's a great place to learn is from your peers who have kind of been up the mountain. So that's a great final kind of resource we can.
No, I appreciate that. And we will definitely put that in the show notes as well. And certainly we will promote and highlight the event in Sundance, which is a beautiful area, I understand. So it sounds like you guys are going right out of the gate. You guys are reintroducing the world to KA Connect with an outstanding conference in August. So if you're listening to this and it's after August, well, just go online and start following Christopher and the rest of his team at Knowledge Architecture and just kind of stay up to date on what they're doing. But we'll make sure that we provide as much information as we can on our show notes about how to get in contact with them and stay in contact with them, because let's just say that sharing is caring in this space. And a lot of folks that eat, sleep, and drink the design industry space as an AEC professional, this is why we do this podcast in the first place, is just to share information and ideas. And certainly we were fortunate enough to have Christopher today to share what he's working on and what he's doing to make a difference in our industry. So Christopher Parsons, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Zweig Letter podcast.
Appreciate you. Appreciate the opportunity, and also appreciate, shout out Zweig White. Like, I got my idea to get into knowledge management from a Zweig.
I called it Zweig Group.
This is how far I go back with y'all.
It's all good.
So no, but when it was Zweig White, I went to a conference in 2004 and got the ideas for what we're doing now. And the White and Zweig White, Fred White, works at Knowledge Architecture now. So we have deep ties.
Fred,
and
Fred is
appreciates everything you do.
Friend, very, very good guy. And probably, you know, like they say, you're in a room, you don't want to be the smartest person in the room. And if you are the smartest person in the room, you need to find a different room. So I used to like being in rooms where Fred White was, because he was always the smartest guy in the room. So
six moves ahead.
For sure. Well, thanks again, Chris. We appreciate you, man. Well, folks, that's another episode of the Zweig Letter Podcast. To learn more about one of the oldest newsletters in the design industry, visit zweiggroup.com. You can read articles online, listen to this podcast, and sign up for a free subscription to the newsletter and have it delivered right into your email inbox every Monday morning. Sign up today. For more information about Zweig Group's advisory services or any Zweig Group publications, visit zweiggroup.com. You can also follow or subscribe to the Zweig Letter podcast wherever you listen to it. And please, please, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you back here soon for another new episode of the Zweig Letter Podcast. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to the Zweig Letter Podcast. We hope that you can be part of elevating the industry and that you can apply our advice and information to your daily professional life. For a free digital subscription to the Zweig Letter, please visit thezweigletter.com/subscribe. To gain more wisdom and inspiration, in addition to information about leadership, finance, HR, and marketing your firm. Subscribe today.